with Coretta Thomas. It is January 18th, 2010. And Coretta, let's pick up where you left off.
Okay. We were talking about year-end incentives and all the work that it took to do that figuring, and we worked very closely with Subi Von Hayden and Associates, John Subi and Jack Cotton. And in addition, one of the big things that I did was work with the department's business expenses for not only the doctor's business expenses, but the department itself. And they were very involved in helping us follow the rules and regulations, and that was a big job also. Sometime, and I can't remember the year, we had already closed the OB on the University Hospital and opened over at Meritor, and we were doing all of our OB there. And then some years later, we started getting involved with Mount Sinai Hospital in Milwaukee. We had added faculty from there to our faculty, and the residents were rotating down there, and some of the faculty were going to Milwaukee doing lectures for their residents, and their faculty was coming to Madison to do lectures for our residents. So that was another splinter of the department. One of the things that we also did, just not too many years before I left, so let's see, I left in 98, so I would expect it was about 95, we started negotiating with the Rowley Amelius Group, which was a private practice group in town, and our obstetricians wanted to specialize in perinatal medicine, and so there was no one really doing a lot of normal OB. So we added the Rowley Amelius Group, and they practiced out at the West Clinic, and they did most of the normal OB for the department.
And they have now gone up to Mauston, have they?
Well, I know that somebody from that group has gone up to Mauston. I don't know. That was after I left, so I don't know for sure who's all up there.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I thought was difficult in our department was that we were so spread out, and it makes it hard. I was surprised that they were able to even recruit new chairmen, because it's very difficult when you're spread out into different places. One of the things that I thought, Dr. Peckham was a very strong leader, and when he left, Ted Quilligan came. He was only there for a couple of years. I think he would have been a very good chairman and strong too, but he was only there for a couple of years. Then they recruited Dr. Chester Martin. He was in our own department at that time doing research. And he was chairman for about 8 years, I believe. And after he left, Doug Lowvey came. He came from the University of Iowa. And they were both nice men and good in their field, but neither one of them were strong leaders. And the division chairman, Dr. Julian, Dr. Henderson, Dr. Shapiro, and Dr. Kloss was head of research. They all became pretty strong, but people kind of went their own way, and we didn't have the cohesiveness that I think we had under Dr. Peckham. There were many times when I thought maybe I might have been the only one in the department that was worried about where the department was going and how we were going to survive. But we did. We survived. And, of course, a lot of changes have been made since I left 12 years ago that I don't even know about. But I was an administrator in the department for 32 years and worked with four different chairmen. And they all were very different. I was with Dr. Peckham, of course, for the most years, and it was quite an experience, dealing with the different individuals and the way they administered the department. When Dr. Lowvey came, there were a couple of pretty serious problems with faculty in the department that were pursuing legal action against the department. One was for not being able to retain or get tenure. And the other one was had to do with finances and raises. And it was a very contentious time, and we got involved with the Attorney General's office and the faculty governance, and it was very difficult for Dr. Lauby, who was walked into this mess, and it was several years. It took 2 or 3 years before it was straightened around, and in the long run, the department prevailed, which was good. One of the things that I wanted to talk about towards the end of my tenure there in the department, someone at the higher ups at the university and the state personnel got concerned about the administrators and how they were being paid, getting supplements and incentives, and they did a big survey. We had a lot of meetings and a lot of questions of how things were handled, and eventually they completely changed the way our titles and salary were structured. I had mentioned earlier that I started out as a classified employee and was changed to an academic staff. We were grandfathered into academic staff titles. They let us continue to have our academic staff. A big portion of my salary was paid through the practice plan in supplement and incentives. And we all had to do job descriptions, and they divided things into the big departments and the smaller departments, the have departments and the have not departments. And as it ended up shaking out, my salary ended up being $75,000 a year, and it came completely from the university. And of course, I was used to making more than that. And so what I did is I took my retirement and then came back and worked for 3 years on a contract with the medical school. And therefore, I got my university salary, and I also got my retirement. So that allowed me to maintain my salary at what it had been at previous levels. So that was a big change, and it was a big change for a lot of the administrators in the department.
Did they do this with the ones that had the degrees?
They did it with everybody, all the academic staff. Oh. And so no one was able to get supplements and incentives anymore on the administrative staff. We were mm-hmm. all paid completely through the university. Mm-hmm. And some people got more money under the new structure, and some people got less. And I suspect there were a fair amount that stayed about the same. We were considered a small department, but we were a have department because we did surgery, and we brought a lot of money into the university, into the medical school. So even though we were a small department, we did bring a fair amount of money in to our billing. I always thought it was a little bit unfair because the big departments, they could hire a lot of support people to do the different aspects. And the smaller departments like ours, I ended up doing a lot of the things that the other administrators didn't have to do because they had people under them to do it. So we had to know a little bit about a lot of things. And so it all shook out pretty well, I think. And people grumbled about it for a long time, and it was a big change. But anyway, it happened. They made it the new way, and we had to deal with it. So,
did they restrict the doctors' salaries?
No,
as well?
No, they didn't. No, the doctors were paid through the university as state employees, and then they were paid the addition to that from their practice plans. And each department had their own practice plan and different ways of dividing the money. Ours, I believe I spoke earlier about our incentive program was based on dollars brought in through the practice plan, hours spent doing teaching and other non-money generating activities, and then also what we termed the department's the chairman's brownie points. And so each plan had their own structure, and the doctors were not limited to how much they could make. That depended completely on their department's incentive plans.
You mentioned Dr. Shapiro. Sander Shapiro had the in vitro department or section.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a moneymaker?
Yeah, it was.
Was it successful, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was pretty successful. There weren't that many people around our area that were doing it. Obviously, there were other universities doing it, but we had people coming from all the states surrounding us into the program. He also ran a big artificial insemination program, and they had a big research lab for the in vitro fertilization, and it did bring money into the department. Obviously, the biggest money maker was the oncology department, and perinatal medicine. Everyone was really doing pretty well as far as the money that they brought in. Of course, we all had to pay a share of the expenses of the AUP that did the affiliated university physicians that did the billing, and then medical school got a portion of it, the dean's office, and so it was. And as I understand, after I left in '98, they continued to do well financially, and of course the doctors in our department did not make as much as the doctors in private practice, but for academic medicine, I think we did pretty well.
Also, there was an abortion clinic.
There was an abortion
clinic. And that was started in 1973, as I recall.
I can't remember the date, but yes.
Well, it was right after Roe v. Wade was passed.
Right, and we did a lot of abortions. We did them at the University Hospital for early abortions, and then we did some second trimester abortions over at Meritor Hospital. And it was a very big money-making operation for the department. As more and more people around the area started doing abortions, we did less and less. And of course, there was Dr. Yovanovitch, who was a member of our department, left our department and then went into private practice in town and did abortions. And so they were available, more easily available. And we've kind of then phased, after a number of years, we phased out and we didn't do very many. We still continue to do second trimester abortions for, in the perinatal program for defective fetuses and problems with the mother. But we didn't do very many first trimester abortions towards the end. I think this pretty much is pretty much what I have to say. I just wanted to kind of end up by saying I started working in the department 32 years I was there. I started under Dr. Ben Peckham, and at that time there were only four other physicians, Bill Kiekhofer, Al Cannon, Madeline Thornton, and Ralph Campbell. And over the years, of course, we had a lot of people come and go. We had some faculty that were there for many years. Tom Julian was head of the department's benign gynecology, and Sander Shapiro was endocrine infertility, and he was there, gosh, he must have been there about 30 years because he came shortly after I started and he left just shortly before me. Dr. Dolores Beekler was in charge of oncology for many years, and then she stepped down and she stayed on the faculty, but Dr. Julian Schenck was the division head, and he was there for a number of years. Perinatal medicine had several people come and go. Dr. Perry Henderson started the program under Dr. Peckham, and he stayed for a number of years. So we had some faculty that was very long-term, and we had other ones that were just there a year or two or five. But those are the most important people in my life because they were the ones that I worked with the most. I think that It was a wonderful career for me. I owe a debt of gratitude to Dr. Ben Peckham for forcing me to take the job when I didn't think I wanted it. It ended up being the best move that I ever made. He was very good to me, and I made more money than I ever thought I would make. He allowed me to grow and take on responsibilities that sometimes I didn't think that I had the capabilities of doing, but we forged ahead and we did it. And when I left and they posted my job for a replacement, there was a requirement of a master's degree, and I started my job 32 years earlier with just a high school diploma. So I feel like I accomplished a lot, and I guess that was the end of my career, and it was taken over by someone else who had worked in the medical school, and she stayed there, Mary Gillum. She was in the department for 3 years, and I don't know the people who have taken over since then. And I guess that's about it.
Well, thank you, Coretta. That was just wonderful.
Well, I hope it's what you wanted, and made me stop and think of some of the old things that I hadn't thought about for a while.
Yes.
And it was a wonderful experience most of the time. And I was really lucky to be able to do that.
Good. Well, thank you very much for taping this for the archives. We appreciate it, and personally, I appreciated you for many, many years.
Well,
so you sort of became a member of our family.
Thank
Everybody
you.
Knows who Coretta is.
Thanks.
Somebody said if somebody knew Ben Peckham, they knew Coretta. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
We're going to add a little piece on here because Coretta and I have been talking, and there were a couple of other people that were in the apartment for a long time, and we think that they ought to go on the record.
Right. We're remembering Ben Coret, who was in perinatal medicine, and Ron Olson, who also was in perinatal medicine. Ron was in the community as a private practice physician. He trained with our department, then went into the community as a private practice physician, and then Ben recruited him back into the department as a full-time faculty, and he was a great addition. Ben Coret was in our residency training program, and then he went off to Yale and did a additional education for perinatal medicine, and then came back as a full-time faculty member, and he was there for many years, and they were both very supportive of the department, and we just didn't want to forget to mention them.
Yeah. Ben Coret did work with sheep, as I recall.
Yes, he did. He did both. He did research, and he did work with sheep, and I think that I remember an incident when he used to bring his sheep into the hospital, and he'd put him in a laundry cart and cover him up and bring him into the hospital to do some procedures that he couldn't do in his lab, and that was a funny thing, and he got in trouble for it, but he worked with sheep, and he had a very successful research program, and he went on and worked at New Mexico and went to the department in New Mexico. And Ron Olson stayed in the department until he retired, and they were both great additions and were their loyal faculty.
Good. All right. Thanks, Coretta.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.